Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, listeners, just a quick note before we start. Like everybody, we are doing all of our interviews remotely these days, and so there's a bit of an echo on some of the audio, but hopefully most of you won't hear it. All right, here's the show.
I'm Kim France.
And I'm Talia Bikatsis.
And welcome to Everything is Fine, a podcast for women over 40. We're here today with Melissa Clark, the New York Times food columnist and all-around legend. Melissa reports on food trends. She introduced the world to the deep-fried Twinkie, creates recipes, and appears in cooking videos linked to her column, A Good Appetite. She's written several cookbooks of her own. The most recent one is Dinner in French. Welcome, Melissa. We're so excited to have you here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So excited. It feels like a really big deal to have a cooking expert at this point in time because everybody's freaking out about cooking. And so I wanted to ask you, how are you coping? Because it feels like a very challenging time to keep coming up with recipes and to keep people excited.
Well, actually, it's kind of, you know, in terms of getting people excited about cooking, it's a great time for that. I mean, bad circumstances, but a great time for people actually getting into their kitchen and needing to learn how to cook. You know, we've never been a society so dependent on cooking for ourselves as we are now. And so people who never cook, or maybe who cook every once in a while, or they only cook dinner, you know, for friends, like they only cook for dinner parties. Now we all have to cook pretty much every day, three times a day, if not just for ourselves, for our families also. So this is a pretty heavy lift for people who are not used to cooking, and it's getting the conversation going, and people are really, you know, they're into it. They're so into it. And it's, you know, food is actually one of the few joys we have right now that we're like, hey, mealtime, you know, it's we can eat. I hope, I mean, I know I'm indulging. I think a lot of people out there are baking and indulging and eating and making cocktails and drinking, and, you know, we'll go with what we have.
It's true, except that I feel like for the first 2 or 3 weeks, I was so excited and I was doing everything and I was getting really creative. And then I definitely petered out a little bit. But it's true. It's a good way of looking at it, that it's an exciting time. How are you approaching recipe writing right now?
So I'm sort of doing it in two different ways. So I have my normal column, which is, you know, A Good Appetite in the Times. And that one, I'm trying to just keep that as if there was no pandemic going on. I mean, not really, like I do allude to it in the column, but I'm keeping the food in my normal vein, which is pretty creative. And I'm trying to get it, you know, to keep it interesting for people. But then I'm doing another column, which is called Cooking from the Pantry. And that is something that's geared to people who maybe are new to cooking or newer to cooking. And it's focusing on pantry staples. So what are you going to do with those beans that you bought? You know, you stocked up on all that pasta. Let me give you some more interesting ways to use it that are still very simple. Or even like my latest column, I did one on roast chicken and then using the bones immediately to make stock. So super simple things, but that people are actually doing now. Like I mean, a lot of times in the past, I think people would have probably either thrown out their chicken bones if they weren't used to making stock on a regular basis, or maybe thrown them in the freezer and then, you know, made a big production, made stock like once a month. But what I'm trying to do is get people into the kitchen ecosystem, get people into, you know, we're cooking every day, we're there every day. So let's start building habits that for once make sense with our brand new lifestyle, you know?
Mm-hmm. This has been a really revelatory time for me because for the past, I used to be a pretty good cook. And then for the past 10 years, I just dropped out of it entirely. And so this has been pretty exciting for me. I would have to say, I mean, it gets a little exhausting and I live alone. So whatever I eat for the next few days.
Yeah.
But I am curious what you think of spatchcock chicken, speaking of roast chicken, because my brother is obsessed with spatchcock chicken.
I'm
totally bet it's because he just wants to say it.
Oh, I know, right?
I think so, too.
It just sounds so dirty. It's just not. It's just a chicken with its backbone cut out. I love spatchcock chicken. In fact, I probably make spatchcock chicken more often than I make any other kind of roast chicken just because it's so fast. And
yeah,
I like
really?
That. Yeah, it's really fast because what you're doing is you're opening up the chicken. So a normal chicken, you know, have that cavity on the inside, right? So it's like the inside of that cavity is, in a way, it insulates the chicken. It keeps it from cooking really quickly because there's air in there and it doesn't get as hot. So imagine you take the chicken, you cut the backbone up, you open it up and the cavity disappears. So you're cooking more of the chicken is touching the hot baking pan. So you have better heat conduction and it cooks faster. And it just gets so crispy. The skin gets so crispy. And because the breast is a little bit raised up and the legs are really flat on the pan, the legs cook in the same time that the breast cooks. Normally, you know, you have that divide, like you make a roast chicken and the breast is like maybe a little dry by the time the legs cook through, right? You always have that like, but with a spatchcock chicken, it all cooks evenly and it cooks in like 35 minutes or less, depending on the size of your chicken. So yay, spatchcock chicken. The only tricky thing is you have to, you know, be willing to get up close and personal with your chicken and cut the backbone out. which is definitely like a barrier to entry for many people, I understand. I know Trader Joe's sells spatchcock chickens. I don't know what the lines at Trader Joe's are like these days. I have been shopping very locally. So, you know, obviously no one's getting on the subway. But I can't get a spatchcock chicken in my local store. So and I don't mind cutting the backbone out. But I know some people are like, ew, I'm not touching that raw chicken with a scissor.
Because you need the scissors. It can't be done with a strong knife.
Oh, you could do it with a knife, but that's harder.
Okay. I don't have a lot of skill with raw meats.
So yeah, well, that's okay. The thing, right? But I mean, if anyone is curious, you can just go online and watch a YouTube video. I have made one myself. Many people have. And it's really, once you do it once, you're like, oh yeah, that's not hard. It's just, you know, like I said, getting over the squeamish factor.
Mm. Now, tell me, what is your favorite underrated ingredient?
I mean, I am the anchovy queen. I love anchovies so much. I don't know if they're underrated anymore. Do you guys feel like there's like an anchovy renaissance happening that people are all of a sudden starting to love anchovies? Or do you feel like they're still maybe not as popular as they should be? What is your take on this?
I feel like everybody has one friend who knows that they're really good and that like that person knows what to do with them. I don't actually know what to do with them.
I know a lot of anchovy deniers, just people who will not abide an anchovy, but if I cook and put an anchovy in a recipe, I would guess they wouldn't know it was there.
They totally don't know it's there. So my daughter should know that there are anchovies in her favorite pasta recipe. I cook it in front of her all the time. I don't hide the anchovies. I don't call it pasta with anchovies. I mean, I call it pasta with garlicky breadcrumbs, but I also put anchovies in those breadcrumbs. So I don't know. Am I lying to her? But yet she has no idea they're there. She will tell you she hates anchovies, but it makes it so delicious. And the more anchovies I put in those breadcrumbs, the more she likes it. So I think that, and she has an excellent palate. So I really do think that people think they know what an anchovy tastes like. And they think it tastes like that gross thing on a pizza that they had when they were seven and they were so disgusted because those were really bad anchovies.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Anchovies are associated with pizza.
Yeah.
Bad pizza.
Yeah. But if you have really good anchovies, they don't taste fishy. And when you put them in something, they totally dissolve. You really don't know they're there. You just get this like umami yumminess.
Mm. Now, what is your favorite, maybe trendy, overrated ingredient?
Preserved lemons. Are those overrated?
That's funny. I order from a cheese market in Essex Market that has preserved lemons, and I got some because that felt like a sophisticated cook thing to do.
I think they're great. I love them, but I do. I mean, my boss, Sam Sifton from the time said, you know what? No more preserved lemons for a while. Okay. We're just going to take a little breather and let's just not do them.
I feel like they're just lemons.
Lemons are the best.
No, I mean the preserved lemons. I feel like they're just lemons.
Right. They're just lemons that have, you know, gotten funky and fermented and salted. Fine. So
what do you cook on days when you can't be bothered?
Anchovy toast or sardine toast. That is our absolute, you know, we had that last night. That is our, I don't want to cook meal. And
your kids will eat that?
No, Dahlia won't eat that. No, because of those, then she can see the anchovy. So she's not going to eat that. No, what did she have last night? So I'll make that for my husband and myself. And she will have, you know, a sausage or something. I like pull something out of the freezer, a sausage. Mm. I think or like a quesadilla or a piece of toast with just cream cheese on it. I don't know. I'm a bad thing. When it comes, sometimes I'm just like, oh, you're fine. Just have some cheese cubes. I feed her like a mouse sometimes. She's 11. I'll cut up cheese cubes and just put them on a little plate with like cut up tomatoes. And
she's probably thrilled.
She's totally fine.
It's the best meal ever.
I was about to ask you, I've accumulated an abundance of tinned fish. And some of it's kind of fancy. I have this tin of grilled branzino, and I have no idea what to do with
it. I think
that.
I have that same. Oh, my God. I think I have the same tin. I have also a tin of grilled branzino. I was like, why did I buy this? What is this? I don't know what I'm going to do with it either. Okay. My guess is it's going to go right on toast. So, because or pasta. I think it'd be good either in the anchovy pasta recipe or on toast. My feeling is that if I did that on toast, I would do a homemade mayonnaise underneath.
Homemade mayonnaise. Right. Whoa.
Extra delicious. Homemade mayonnaise. Do you have a blender, Tali? Do you have a blender? Homemade mayonnaise is the easiest thing in the world, I swear to God.
Really?
Yes.
I do have a blender, yeah.
It is so easy. And it will if you like mayo, it will change your life. It is so good. And we always put garlic in ours and make it an aioli. And it's just like, I mean, my daughter, when she asks for a BLT sandwich these days, she'll be like, if I don't get out the blender first to make the mayo, she's upset. Like if I pull out the helmet, she's like, Mom.
When you said that she was eating cheese cubes, I thought the cobbler's children have no shoes, but I can see that's not the case at all.
It depends. You know, sometimes she gets treated. Like today, she's really into tamagoyaki, which is a Japanese egg omelet, you know, that you get for sushi. You know that?
Oh, mm-hmm. But it's sweetened. Yeah. And it has mirin in it.
Exactly. Yeah. So I have learned how to make that for her. So she gets plenty of, she's spoiled rotten in her ways, but then, yes, some nights she does just get cheese cubes.
So what, you put like egg yolk probably in oil in a blender or something?
For the mayo? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's seriously, it's so easy. I wrote a big article about it. So if you look it up, you will, and you read it, you'll see it's just the easiest thing.
I am one of those people who absolutely like gags on store-bought mayonnaise, but I like homemade mayonnaise, especially aioli.
Yeah.
A lot.
A lot of people are like, I actually have a lot of friends who are like that. They can't stand, I mean, I can see why, you know, jarred mayonnaise. I mean, I like it, but I can see it's gloppy. It's not to everybody's taste, but homemade mayonnaise is so good.
Kim, that may be the most bougie thing you've ever said.
That's an accomplishment.
I know, because you've said a lot of bougie things.
And you know what else can I just say? Preserved lemons chopped up and put into homemade mayonnaise. Now that is beyond. You put your tin fish on top of that on your toast and you are living.
So I'm sure a lot of people want to know also what produce right now lasts the longest.
Yeah, this is a thing. So we are big into celery salads right now.
Oh.
No, they're great. I mean, celery is one of those veggies that, like, you know how you always have celery in the fridge and it's just always fine? Like, it's there, like, you buy it and then a month later.
It wilts.
It wilts, but it's pretty much fine. You know,
okay.
Yeah, I still use it when it's soft.
Yeah, it doesn't get rotty. It gets a little soft, but it's not like lettuce that's going to get rotty. So it'll stay, and you can always revive it if you just soak it in a bowl of water. Anything that you have that gets a little soft, any veggies, throw it in a bowl of cold water. Like if your carrots, your radishes get a little, like, you know, mushy, bowl of ice water for 10 or 20 minutes, and it'll perk it right back up.
I actually discovered that by accident the other day because I joined a CSA and they sent me some kale and a ton of unidentifiable root vegetables. But they sent this kale that I didn't use in time and it was looking really sad. And I put it in some cold water to get the dirt off and everything. And then it was perfect.
Yeah, it just perked right up. Yep, exactly. So I do that a lot. Yeah, we have the same thing with the kale. You know what works really well? If you And this is like this, you really have to get into the groove of this. This is like, talk about that sort of kitchen ecosystem, right? You get your CSA box home, which is what I do, and you clean all the vegetables at once. You put on your music. You're just like, I'm getting into this groove. I'm going to get into this space of cleaning my veg, clean everything at once. You clean your kale. You take it off the stem. You throw it in a plastic bag. You take those root vegetables. You scrub them or you throw them out if you really know you're not going to eat them. And that way they don't look at you again.
No, they're staring so hard at me right now.
You triage them immediately. The second you come in the door, you're like, okay, Senchokes, into the trash with you. I will not. I got salsify the other day. I'm like, and it just stared at me from the fridge for weeks. And finally, it got disgusting and I threw it out. I'm like, you know what? From now on, I'm just going to throw it out immediately so I don't have to have that guilt. But then if you do clean it all, then it's waiting for you. And it just makes it so much easier to use everything because on those nights you're really tired, your kale is there. And it's like, oh, all you have to do is saute me with some garlic and that takes 5 minutes. So as opposed to like cleaning and, you know.
How do I clean leafy vegetables in corona times?
Okay, so you don't have to worry about. So this comes up a lot. Food is not a vector. There's no coronavirus in your food. I mean, if you took that, say that somebody sneezed, someone who had coronavirus, coughed right on that kale leaf and you rubbed it in your eye, maybe you would get it. But it's not really a vector for food. The plastic bag it came in, you know, take it out of the plastic bag and wash your hands. But it's also, even that is not such a big deal. Like the big thing is being in a room with a bunch of people who aren't wearing masks. But as far as your leafy vegetables, don't even worry about it because it's just a vector. But yeah, don't rub it in your eye, just to be sure. Yeah. Just to be safe.
Too late. Okay. Well, it does sound like a lot of work, but I'll do that. Okay. So now another thing that we're thinking about a lot is going through the foods in our freezers. What does 6 months in the freezer do to something like hamburger meat? Like, let's say I've dug down to the bottom and I found some older frozen meats.
Right. It's fine.
What can I?
It's fine. It really is fine. I mean, say that you take it out and you defrost it and it looks kind of gray and weird. Mm-hmm. I would say that is when you want to make it into chili rather than making it into a burger. You want to add like a lot of stuff to it and hide it. But it's fine. You're not going to, as long as it's been frozen solid and it's not like the freezer has accidentally gotten unplugged and then it thawed for 3 weeks and then you plugged it back in. Like as long as it's been solidly frozen, it will degrade in quality, but it's not going to be dangerous to eat. So you don't need to worry about it. I mean, mostly it's the texture that's going to be a little funky. But if you're making something like a chili or any kind of braise, so you have a piece of meat that's in the freezer and you're like, it's kind of gray. Just if you cook it for a long time, so find a recipe where it's supposed to be cooked for a long time and then with like spices and stuff. So like maybe you have like a chunk of lamb that's been in there forever or like a piece of pork. Just make it into a curry, you know, or like a braise and then you know it's going to be fine.
I always heard that that's how chili got invented, was like out west when they were on the trail and they had meat that was about to go bad, they would turn it into chili.
I don't know. I think chili was already a thing. I think they'd use the fresh meat too. I feel like there was already, you know, in the Southwest, there was already a taste for using lots of chili peppers. Like it was already so much part of the diet. So I think that, however, it will keep. I mean, if you add a lot of spices to something, it does keep longer. You know, if you put in the fridge, something that it's highly spiced and highly salted will last longer than something that isn't. So it does preserve it, but it's also just delicious and worth using your nice, freshly killed venison or whatever you've got out on the range when you're...
That's definitely not in my repertoire.
Your venison chili.
Yeah, no.
What is freezable that you wouldn't think is freezable?
People are also, you know, people are definitely interested in their freezers again, which is great. Everything is freezable, like eggs. People don't think eggs are freezable. But
what? Raw eggs or cooked eggs?
Raw eggs.
What?
Yep. Take them out of the shell first, crack them into a container and throw them in the freezer.
No way.
Wow.
Yep.
This is mind-blowing.
That is pretty mind-blowing.
And you know what else? Half and half. All dairy products are going to be, I mean, so you know how you buy a thing of half and half and you don't use it all up in your coffee and you've got like half of it left and you're like, this is going to go bad. Throw it in the freezer. It may separate. So when you thaw it, it may separate. It won't go bad, but it may separate. So what happens when it separates in the freezer is that it loses its emulsification. So the fat breaks out. So sometimes you might see little lumps in it, but it's not spoiled. It's just a little lumpy. And all you have to do is take that half and half out of the freezer, thaw it, and then throw it in the blender for like a minute, and it's going to re-emulsify it. Same principle as mayonnaise. It just brings it all back together, and then you put it in a little pitcher in your fridge, and you're good to go.
But not milk.
Milk.
Like regular.
Even milk. Yep.
Even milk.
Even milk. If you're doing like a low-fat milk, it won't eat, there's not enough fat in it even to separate out, so it'll be totally fine. But if you use whole milk, then there might be some fat to separate out.
I'm going to tell you that my dad has found the thing which is not freezable, which is lettuce.
Yeah, you're right. No, you can't freeze lettuce. Did he really try?
If he would have salad left over from one dinner where we were all visiting him mysteriously, it would show up at the next dinner really wilted. And we'd be like, isn't this the same salad as last time? And he's like, yeah, I froze it.
Oh, God, no, really?
Anyway,
that is a crime against food. That is one of those crimes against food that, yeah, don't freeze your salad. Don't do it.
I want to hear more crimes against food.
I was thinking about that. So I was thinking about this. I was talking to someone. I did a Facebook Live earlier today where I was talking to someone, and we were talking about crimes against food. And he was like, well, what do you think about like blueberry bagels? And I'm like, you know, I'm cool with blueberry bagels. Like, I'm okay with that. Like, but what is not okay with me is like something like a blueberry bagel's fine, but like an old bagel or a bagel that's been like left to get stale on the counter and then you try to toast it, that's a crime against food. The fresh blueberry bagel, that is okay with me. So I think it's just like, or like frozen salad, mistreating a perfectly good ingredient.
That makes sense. We're going to take a quick break for some ads.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Support for Everything is Fine comes from Ritual. So I love Ritual. Everyone knows I love Ritual. I talk about Ritual all the time. I particularly love their daily multivitamin. And I also really have been enjoying their melatonin. But the thing I love most about Ritual is their Hyacera. It's a once daily skin supplement that's clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. In a clinical study, Hyacera led to 3.6 times reduction in crow's feet wrinkles within 90 days as compared to a placebo. Hyacera led to 2.9 times increase in skin smoothness within 90 days as compared to a placebo. You can enhance your skincare routine from the inside out with one daily capsule essenced with soothing vanilla. I love Hyacera. It's been rigorously tested and validated. It's one of the industry-leading sustainability. It meets all of the industry-leading sustainability standards. You know I'm a beauty editor now. I am all about keeping my face plump. And Hyacera absolutely has done that for me. I've been on it for months. I don't even know how long. And I can really see a difference in the texture of my skin. My skin looks more juicy, I guess is the best way to do it. Say it, do it. Okay, so you can start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/fine. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription to get today. That's ritual.com/fine for 25% off.
Welcome back to Everything is Fine.
I feel like the world is divided between people who have Instapots and swear by their Instapots and those of us who have not gotten an Instapot yet. Where do you stand on them?
I wrote two Instapot cookbooks, so I am. I am pro Instant Pot, I believe. But okay, I've learned a lot about Instant Pots from writing these cookbooks, and they're not great for everything. I mean, people want to put everything in their Instant Pots. They're like, I'm going to roast a chicken in my Instant Pot, which is a really bad idea. It's Instant Pots, or just any electric pressure cooker. We shouldn't just say the brand, but they're good for things that are wet and soupy anyway, because it's a wet and soupy environment. So they don't do crispy. They don't do brown. So I always say, don't ask it to, and you'll be happy. Beans, all those dried beans, it is great. It makes the best beans. It really does. Because you know when you cook beans on the stove, and sometimes some of them are nice and soft, and some of them are still kind of hard and crunchy? You're like, what did I do wrong?
Yeah.
The Instant Pot takes care of that because of the pressurized environment. So I love it for that. I love it for braised meats also. It gets it meats really, really tender, and it does it quickly. But, you know, I'm not gonna use it for things like a roast chicken. That's just not going to happen because I just don't think it's good.
I don't have an Instant Pot, but I have a slow cooker.
It's the same thing. I always say that an Instant Pot or an electric pressure cooker is like a slow cooker, except instead of slow, it does it fast. But it's that same moist, wet environment where you just, and also the same convenience of just plugging the thing in and letting it do its thing. And it used to be, I used to say in the olden days, I'd say, well, yeah, you know, you could just plug it in and then like go to work.
Back then.
But now you can say, oh, you can just plug it in and, you know, I don't know, take a nap or go for a run.
Quietly weep.
Exactly. Cancel all your vacations, your summer vacation plans.
Yeah. Now, what are the five ingredients a cook should always have on hand, if you can narrow it down to five?
Okay, well, anchovies, but not for most people. That's just my personal. Garlic. Lemons. I always think, well, you know, of course, salt and olive oil. And then what's the, and then, I mean, is it pasta? Is it rice? Some kind of carbohydrate-y, starchy thing so that you can use all those other things to cook whatever the last thing is, right? You need your salt, your lemons, your olive oil, your garlic, and then, so that's all your flavorings. And then you need the thing that you're going to cook it with. So whatever are you a rice person? Are you a polenta person? Are you a pasta person? And then you need that thing. And then you've got everything. Then you're set. Of course, butter would be good in there too.
You can choose more than five.
Yeah, so butter for sure. I would beans, if we're going to expand the pantry a little bit. Beans, tinned fish. And, you know, Parmesan cheese is another thing. It's just such a flavor booster.
Very, very big line item in my family budget, Parmesan cheese.
Yeah, it's worth spending the money on the good stuff too. It makes a difference.
Now, I put Parmesan cheese in everything, including a pasta that I make with tuna, which I know a lot of people would look down on, but because you're not supposed to mix cheese with fish, but that's okay, right?
You know, those Italians, they have all their rules. You just have to ignore them. They won't even be mad at you for doing it. Just don't call it an Italian pasta dish. Just take your pasta and do your thing. And just like, as long as you don't say this is an authentic, you know, pasta with, you know, tuna, pasta a la tonno, whatever, you're good. I think cheese and fish is perfectly fine. I love, you know what's really good? When you take, you just even bake like a piece of cod or something, and you'd make Parmesan breadcrumbs for that on the top. Oh, like, that's so delicious.
Nice.
Like, you know, and think about bagels and lox, one of the greatest fish and cheese combinations in the history of cooking. Cream cheese and lox, and it is fantastic. So I think you can do fish and cheese.
Good. I feel free now.
Yeah. So a big thing right now has to be substitutions, and I feel like we have to talk about that. What are the most common things we can substitute if we don't have all the items in a recipe? And I know that's probably pretty broad, but...
Well, if you don't have anchovies, you can use chopped olives or capers because you need the saltiness. And so I think... for dairy products, this comes up a lot when you're baking. You know, if you don't have sour cream, you can always use yogurt, or you can use milk with a dash of vinegar in it. You know, you need something to get the sourness. If you don't have one kind of bean, usually another kind of bean is going to work for you.
Well, it's funny you say that, because I noticed that in the Times, there are so many white bean recipes, and white bean seems to be something that is actually in short supply. Everything is kidney beans. And is that just because of the aesthetics, that it looks nicer to have a recipe photographed with white beans, but that it actually doesn't really matter?
Kidney beans have a much more intense flavor than white beans, so you might want to season it slightly differently. white beans. I don't think they're necessarily prettier. I just feel like they were fashionable for a while. Like everybody was doing white beans, right? I think it was just one of those fashion moments.
No, because recently I've been looking for bean recipes and I noticed on the Times it was all white beans.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, you can use, and you've got kidney beans laid in?
Yeah.
I've got so many kidney beans, so many kidney beans.
Yeah. You can print, you can go ahead and use, just change, you know, when you're salting it, kidney beans are they might take the seasonings differently. So just, you know, taste as you go. Another weird thing about kidney beans. Oh, you have a slow cooker. Oh, okay. Kidney beans are bad in the slow cooker.
No, but a lot of them are canned. So,
oh, if they're canned, then you're fine. Then you're totally fine. If you're with canned beans at all, you know what? It's all, you can pretty much do whatever. Yeah. Why are all the canned kidney beans still on the shelves though? That's weird.
I have a friend who works in dry goods, and he said that white beans are in short supply, and so they are putting out more kidney beans.
Interesting. I wonder why that is. But yeah, if so, anyway, all those white bean recipes use kidney beans, especially if it's canned, it's fine.
But are there like secret chef substitutions that we don't know about? Because my family, we've been watching the Great British Baking Show, and for a meringue, they were using the liquid, I don't remember what they called it, the liquid from canned chickpeas.
Oh, the aquafaba.
Yeah. I was like, what are you talking about? They're making vegan meringue with aquafaba or whatever.
Aquafaba, yeah.
And I was like, are there all these secret things that we don't know about that chefs know about?
That is a weird thing. No, chefs didn't even know about that. That was like a weird vegan discovery. I don't know how people figured that out. That is one of those things. Okay. It's like, you know, the first person to eat a lobster, like, why would you do that? The first person to take the water out of a can of chickpeas and make it into meringue.
I know, like, what?
But it works. It works pretty well. I mean, it's not as good as egg white, but if you're vegan and you want a meringue, it really does work pretty well.
It's got the same viscous texture as an egg white. That makes perfect sense.
I guess so. Maybe I guess that's so. Why.
What about ginger? Ginger seems pretty tough to get your hands on these days.
Oh God, I'll mail you some. I have so much ginger. It's so funny. I just got some in a big, you know,
I'll mail you some too.
Boxes. So for things like ginger and garlic and onions, all of those strong flavored ingredients, you can kind of substitute one for the other. I mean, the dish is going to taste different, but it's still going to work. So if you don't have onions, any of the other allium groups, leeks or shallots. Of course, if you don't have onions, you're probably not going to have leeks or shallots. But, you know, also you never know what you're going to run out of before your next supermarket trip. Garlic and ginger, you can kind of use interchangeably. They both are very pungent. And again, the dish will taste different, but it'll still, you know, have that like zippy thing that you're looking for out of those. Soy sauce, if you don't have soy sauce, you know, think in what are things that kind of taste like each other. So what are you looking for in soy sauce is the salt, right? So you want to find another salty ingredient with an umami kick. So maybe you're going to use, you know, Parmesan and some water, or maybe you're going to use anchovies, or you're going to use a little fish sauce, you know, to kind of give your dish that roundness and that flavor. Acids, like if you don't have lemon, you can use vinegars. If you don't have vinegars, you can use lemon, lime. Those are all easy to substitute for each other.
And what can you substitute for butter? Some of these are questions from our Instagram, because we asked people to send in questions. And one person said, we are going through butter like water. What can we substitute?
Oh, God, I know. Me too. Because all that baking. Coconut oil works really well.
Right.
Coconut oil. Right. I would say that's the closest. Butter is like kind of a miraculous substance because of the way that its chemical structure and the way it's emulsified. Like the fact that it stays solid at room temperature. Like other oils turn to liquid, right? So if you're using butter in certain baking recipes, the closest thing is coconut oil. Also, you know, a lot of baking recipes you can do with oil instead of butter. If you ever have a recipe that calls for melted butter because you've turned that fat into liquid, you could use any kind of liquid fat to replace it. So like, you know, like a flavorless oil, like, you know, safflower or whatever, or olive oil even. I use olive oil in baking all the time.
Huh.
Yeah. And that works.
And then somebody wrote in also with, what are the best tasting baking substitutes for people who have allergies? Because a lot of the substitutes make things dense or pasty, they said. What are the best tasting ones?
Yeah, it depends on what your allergies are. It's hard to generalize.
I know, I actually...
Well, if somebody has a gluten allergy.
Yeah. Then you got to get your gluten flour mix. Gluten flour mixes work really well. So does almond flour, just ground up almonds works in a lot of cases. It depends on what else is in the recipe. Like if you have a cake recipe that has eggs in it, it's probably going to be okay with a gluten-free flour. because you're going to get some of the lift from the eggs. I mean, not necessarily. It really does depend. Oh, I have a great recipe online on the Times. If you're gluten, if you can't have gluten and you want a cake, I have a really nice rice flour pound cake up there that I got from Bien Cui, is this bread bakery in Brooklyn, and it, the chef's recipe from that place, and it's great. Ooh. And it's all rice flour. So it's also uses coconut oil and butter, but you can do it with all coconut oil. So it can also be vegan. Oh, no, no, it has eggs. Wait, can't be vegan. Scratch that. But it can be if you run out of butter.
Now, one of my favorite things about the Times recipes is the comment section, because I love reading what liberties people take with the recipes.
Yes.
But some of them, like someone will write in, my husband hates goat cheese, so I smashed up a banana. And do you ever want to look at things like that and just say that is batshit crazy?
All the time. Oh my God. People are like, I love when people make fun of those too. They're like, okay, so I made the roast chicken, except I used a squash and I didn't have the, you know, the garlic. So I took an old boot and ground it up. And sometimes, I mean, when they're earnest and when they're actually writing what they did, it's cool. I get ideas from there all the time. I'm like, really? You did that and it worked, huh? File it away for the future. And also it's helpful for me because it's like, I know what works for people and what doesn't. If people are like, this recipe used 14 bowls, it was too complicated. Like, okay, you know, it's just good to check in to see what real people in the real world are doing with the recipes.
Right.
Somebody asked, she wanted to know about ramen. She said, you know, she can't get the real deal right now and packaged ramen is awful. Is there an in-between solution?
Yes, totally. So you should buy the packaged ramen and throw away the package, the little flavor pack, but keep the noodles. Okay. And then make your own because it's really easy. If you have good broth, ramen is just about flavoring the good broth. And I forget, I think it's like, you know, soy sauce, ginger, a little bit of, I mean, if you have dashi or seaweed, mm-hmm. or even like granular seaweed, like the stuff in the shaker, you want to flavor that broth really intensely. And then you've got your ramen noodles from the package. So buy the package, throw out the flavor pack, and use the noodles. There's so many ramen recipes online. Scallions, I think, go in there. And it's just not hard if you're buying the broth.
In a panic, I bought a box of ramen. Like, not a box of ramen. A box full of individual ramens.
Oh, my God, Kim. What are you going to do with it all?
I don't know. It's just taking up room in my pantry. And I was in a White Hawk panic. I was like, I will never eat again. I must order all the food.
Yes, you should see. So I did that same thing and you should see my pantry is really embarrassing. You know what I bought? Stress bought a case, 12 boxes of Diamond Crystal kosher sea salt, 12 of kosher salt, 12. And you know what? Have you seen how big those boxes are? They're like, each one is like as big as a phone book. Remember phone books?
But that'll take you years to get through.
Yeah. Well, but I'll never run out. I panicked. I couldn't get it. I went to 3 stores and nobody had it. And I was running. I was like, I can't cook with Morton's. I need Diamond Crystal.
I actually have my extra bedroom has become an auxiliary pantry because I've run out of room in my pantry.
Yeah, that's
because you're going to get hate mail for all the hoarding.
I mean, I haven't done crazy hoarding. I just have I happen to have a very small pantry.
Oh, fair. Fair.
I mean, how many rolls of toilet paper do you consider a good amount to have in storage without being a hoarder? What is the what's the threshold there?
Oh, wow. This is a divisive question.
I don't have an answer. I'm just wondering. I'm like, do I have too many? Am I hoarding? Like, how many is too many to have?
I feel like there's the public facing answer and the private answer. Like, oh, probably 10 is fine. Meanwhile, I'm like, I probably have, I don't know, 40.
Do you have 40 rolls of toilet paper?
I don't actually know. Well, the other thing is, I think I told you, my dog is eating them accidentally. She will secretly grab them and shred them. Oh, and so it's a big problem.
Oh, my God.
I know. It's the worst
problem. Yeah, dogs don't know from toilet paper. They don't need it.
Dogs don't know from quarantine.
Yeah.
We're like, this is a hot commodity. You can't take this. Someone asked for less hands-on sauté-based meals, things you can prep ahead of time and pop in the oven so you can spend time outside. Although I don't know what...
Outside where? I guess...
I don't know what they mean. Lucky them.
Yeah. I mean, there are people who live in the country and can go outside.
Tally, I sort of think of you as living in the country. I know that's not true, but I mean, compared to me, you live in the country. You have a backyard.
I do have a backyard. I do have a backyard, but it's city living. Like, it's a townhouse. It looks kind of like Brooklyn, like where all the houses are attached, but there's a very tiny backyard for the dog and for a few plants. But we are going outside probably more than you are in New York.
Oh, yeah. So wait, you're in...
I'm in Montreal.
Oh, you're in Montreal. Okay. And so are there the same kind of restrictions or?
I think it's less intense. It's not a shelter in place because we don't have that vocabulary, like that terminology here, but it's, you know, you're only supposed to be going out for essentials and schools are canceled and everything's closed. I mean, it's the same type of thing, but it's...
You know, I don't know. Are you guys adjusting or do you feel like you're about to lose it?
It depends on the day.
Yeah. I mean, I had a couple bad days this week, but in general, this has not been, aside from the panic and the fear, this has not been a terrible time for me. I have to say, just being quarantined, I work at home, I live alone. The shift didn't feel that, I mean, it felt monumental, but it didn't feel like a paradigm shift as far as how I live, which right. is kind of crazy.
That's what my husband says too, because he works from home and he never leaves the house anyway, except to go running. So like he's like, his life really hasn't changed. I mean, the big thing is not being able to go to restaurants for, you know, for us, but... You know, I think I feel it more. And of course, you know, school-aged child who is actually quite happy to have unlimited screen time. So, you know.
I know. I have an 11-year-old and an 8-year-old. They're happy, but they want to go back to school. And I never thought I would hear them say that because they were pretty negative about school before.
Wow. Okay, no, my 11-year-old has not flipped over. She's definitely still happier, you know, being home.
I have one last thing. I mean, we had a couple other questions, but we've got so much here. But I can't help. I want to ask you what it's like to be a woman over 40 in your industry. Do you find that your experience is valued or are you coming up against like the hot young thing all the time?
I think experience is not valued. I think I am valued because I've made enough of a name for myself and people have made my recipes and therefore they know I'm reliable, but that's not because I'm over 40 or they see that I am experienced. I feel like experience isn't that important. So I am constantly coming up against the next young thing. And what the next young thing says in terms of recipes or food is considered just as valid as what I say, even though, you know, I mean, when you're over 40, you also have perspective, right? Which they don't have. But it's not for people looking at recipes. I don't think my experience as a recipe writer is what is enticing them into my recipe or giving me more respect in the field, which is, you know, it is what it is. You know, it's a bummer.
No, it's just something we talk about a lot. So I was curious.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, it's a great question. Yeah, no, But I also can put myself in the next young thing's place really easily because I was that at one point, you know, so.
That's what Kim says. Yeah, that's what Kim says all the time.
Yeah, I'm very empathetic because I feel like nobody got ahead quicker, you know, based on being young than I did.
It gives me a lot of empathy. But at the same time, I don't know, do you feel like you also kind of like have a resentment as well, kind of coexisting?
It's impossible not to feel some resentment over the fact that experience doesn't seem to have any value in our working culture anymore. It's impossible not to, for me. But I'm also at peace with it. I do, you know, I have my podcast, I have my blog, I have my book, which someday I will finish, and all those things are satisfying enough, you know, but I would hate to have to be working in media right now as a 56-year-old woman.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, anyway, I don't want to end it on a bummer note, so
but it's, you know, it's mixed. So, but we can end it on a better note.
What's a better, funner food question? Okay. Too many, pivot to too many carbs, not enough veg. This person is craving more dinner, entree, salads. Any tips, ideas, and prep? How can this person eat more vegetables?
Yeah, no. Okay, so this is, you got to balance out all those cakes that you're baking and all the brownies. So I do think, you know, big salad-y meals. It's been cold here. You know, I don't know where this person is writing from, but it's been really cold. So I've been braising my greens and doing like big pots of braised greens, like braised cabbage and braised kale. And
what do you braise them in?
Chicken stock.
Oh, okay.
But it's not a soup because there's just a little chicken stock and I use a ton of garlic and a lot of oil and they're rich and soupy and it's like this big bowl of soupy greens. I love this. And
nice.
I will eat this all the time and it's really healthy. And then because it's only greens, you can like be like, all right, well, I'm going to add some, like a bunch of cheese or I'm going to eat like, you know, goat cheese on toast with it or I'm going to, you know, do a jammy egg with it or I'm going to put a lot of olive oil on top. Because the basis of what you're having is so green and healthful that you can add a little bit of richness without, you know, like putting the whole thing on pasta, which would take it to a different place, but like keeping the main part of it. But then to pivot into salads, same philosophy, because you're mostly eating vegetables, you need a little bit of richness to kind of make it feel satisfying. So nuts and olive oil, like a lot of oil, you know, or maybe you make that aioli or that homemade mayonnaise and you use that on top of your, or like alongside as like a dip. And you just give that, those vegetables some delicious richness to set them off. Or you crumble in some tuna or, you know, or you crumble in some cheese.
Anchovies.
Or anchovies, which I always do.
Can we talk for a minute about a jammy egg? Is a jammy egg a 7-minute egg?
Mostly.
Okay.
Sometimes it's a 6-minute egg, but it's an egg with a center that's like just set and dark yellow as opposed to a hard cooked egg, which is sort of a little bit creamier and lighter yellow. So it's really like just at the point of being solid as opposed to a soft boiled egg.
Okay. I've accomplished that.
Ah, there you go. You've jammy egged it. So, you know. Oh, you know what's really good? Take your jammy egg and put butter on it. Soften butter right on top of your... Butter your eggs.
Nice.
What? On toast?
No, just by itself. You can put it on toast, but you don't have to. Just egg, take your little egg, spread the butter on the yolk, salt, and pepper.
That sounds very decadent and delicious.
It's so good.
Yeah, that sounds really good.
There, that's a good note to end on.
Yeah, butter there we go.
That's perfect. And we didn't even get to talk about the elephant in the room, sourdough. And I'm really happy about that.
I'm happy to talk sourdough with you, but I also...
No, I'm happy not to talk sourdough is what I mean. I don't want to talk about sourdough.
People are going crazy.
I know. I'm living in sourdough shame.
Are you? Do you not sourdough? You don't? Really?
No, because at the beginning I was like, I'm making sourdough. I'm making amazing sourdough, blah, 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 sourdough. And then I had two abject failures and then I was like, fuck sourdough.
Don't let that yeast be the boss of you. You can do it.
No, it is already. Thank you so much, Melissa. This is the most fun I've had basically done. It was super fun. Everyone should check out Dinner in French for more Melissa and her amazing recipes on New York Times Cooking. Is there another way you want people to find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Clark Bar and see lots of pictures of things like soupy greens and buttered jammy eggs.
Nice. Thanks so much for listening to Everything is Fine. We are your hosts, Talia Bikassis
and Kim France.
If you like the show, be sure to rate it and write us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you have suggestions for show ideas or anything else, email us at taliandkim@gmail.com. We also have an Instagram that is EIF Podcast, and you can find Kim on her blog, girlsofacertainage.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.